Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you.
My guest this week is Jim Fowler. Jim's the Chief Information Officer of Nationwide. And as CIO, he's focused on digitizing and automating back office operations, being a catalyst for technology, and helping Nationwide sell into different distribution channels. He cites that customers are looking for a frictionless and seamless experience, and he believes that technology is going to be at the heart of that. Prior to joining Nationwide, Jim spent 18 years at General Electric in a variety of roles, most recently as the Global Chief Information Officer. In this interview, he shares what drew him to Nationwide after nearly two decades at GE. He also elaborates on his three pillars of focus as a chief information officer. Jim's focus on modernizing the technology team itself, which involves becoming more agile, the modernization of all the underlying platforms, such as Nationwide's policy management, claims, life insurance systems, and leveraging the first two pillars to create a set of customer journeys. We also discuss the evolution of the CIO role, Jim's take on AI, digital twins, and quantum computing, and a variety of other topics. And now a word from our sponsor. Technovation is brought to you by Fortinet. I recently caught up with Fortinet's Chief Information Security Officer, Phil Quaid, and he discussed the expanding threat landscape that IT executives and companies more generally encounter daily, and the ways in which Fortinet's security fabric can help.
Almost every organization faces an expanding attack surface caused by digital transformation, threat actors that automate sophisticated attacks, and a growing cybersecurity skills gap. It's more urgent than ever for security leaders to not only be technologists, but strategists that can enable business. The fundamental elements of cybersecurity are speed and integration. Combined with segmentation and access control, you can build a foundation that tilts the odds in your favor, defending at your points of strength. Fortinet can help. Our security fabric spans your entire networked environment from the IoT endpoint through your core and into multi-cloud environments. We integrate each security element to address today's growing threat environment, protecting the expanding attack surface and reduce complexity. This enables actionable threat intelligence to be shared at speed and scale, and automated mitigations that shrink risk windows. It's the cybersecurity strategy and technology used to protect the highest end systems, and it's now accessible to both enterprise and SMB. Just because you cannot eliminate cyber risk does not mean that you cannot manage it. Build your strategy around speed, automation, and integration.
Let's get back to our interview. Jim Fowler, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Hey, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Jim, I thought we'd begin with your current job. You joined Nationwide in the third quarter of 2018. After roughly 18 years with General Electric in a variety of roles with that company. And I wonder what attracted you to this opportunity? Why did it feel like the right time for a move from your perspective?
You know, I got a call in March of 2018 from a good friend of mine who said, hey, Jim, there's a job that's coming up and open up in Ohio. I think you should go take a look at it. And frankly, I wasn't looking and wasn't really interested in going outside, but I've known this person a long time. And he said, I know you're not looking, but go talk to him. And I said, well, who are we talking about? And he said, Nationwide. I'd be lying if I said that my first thoughts were one of excitement, but I trusted him. And I came up and I met with a couple different groups of people. First, I met with kind of three business unit presidents. And then I met with the CEO, and then I met with the board members. And just to give you a little bit of the flavor of kind of why I changed my mind and decided to come, when I talked to the three business unit presidents, the conversation went immediately to the fact that we're in an industry that really has yet to be disrupted, that they are on a journey to get there, and that they would rather disrupt themselves technically before the industry disrupts them, and 100% engaged in that conversation. And we had a really robust dialogue about what that was going to look like and the role that they were looking for their kind of technology partner to play. Second, I met with the CEO, and while he echoed what they talked about, he also helped me understand something that I didn't understand at the time, which is, Nationwide being a mutual insurance company. It is in business and is working for its members. The members own the company. And really got to hear more about the purpose of the company, which is to protect the things that matter most to our members. And the reality being that we can only do that if we meet our members where they want to be. And we know that more and more that's going to be a technology-driven connection. And then third, I met with two of our board members. And in about an hour and a half conversation, had a more cogent and fulsome discussion around how technology was going to change the shape of both the financial services and insurance industries for the next 100 years. And that their view as the stewards of this kind of 100-year-old iconic brand was to make sure that they were helping the leadership get there, and that he wanted a technology leader that can help them do that. And so for me, the purpose of protecting members and working for members was attractive to a business leadership that is completely engaged in asking for help in the disruption journey. And then three, just seeing the level of support that the board has given the company to redefine itself. Those are really what made me, do what was really a hard decision to leave a company that I've, loved for the last 18 years to come to something new.
Jim, I think it's really interesting. A great set of rationale there. And I want to actually stick with the first point you made, which is insurance, with all the fintech disruption and innovation that has happened, the amount of venture capital that's being poured into it, insurtech, if you will, the insurance portion of the fintech has been sort of late or hasn't been as hot as other areas. And I wonder, first of all, your own perception as to why that might be, but even more importantly, what are some of the things now, a number of months into your role, what is the role that you believe digital will play in that disruption?
When you look at insurance, and I think one of the reasons why it is probably the last to be disrupted, for the most part, insurance is sold, not bought. Most people don't wake up in the morning thinking, wow, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy life insurance today, or I'm going to go buy an auto policy. They do it because they have to own a car. They do it because it makes sense to protect the assets that they have. But it's something that was typically been sold, not bought. But we see a new generation of buyer coming to the market that is expecting a different type of transaction where they may want to buy insurance that's usage-based, or they may want to only insure things when they need to. And so the transaction type is changing a little bit. We think it's morphing into something where the product is going to be bought or sold with the thing that it is protecting it. And so we see that change in behavior, which we think is starting to drive the disruption. And so when you look at a lot of the startups that are in our space, specifically in the insurance space, they've focused on that upfront selling capability to make it a more user-friendly, enjoyable experience to go through than it may have been done in the past. And so I think that's the big change for us, Peter, that's driving it in the insurance industry.
And how do you see the role of technology? You mentioned that yours is an organization and yours is a company that has a great appetite for technology to be part of the solution, part of the disrupting of the company itself, so to say. Can you talk a bit about some of your plans? How you foresee that unfolding?
Yeah, I hate to say this because I've probably heard other peers of mine in the industry say this, but I say it because I think it's true. This is really turning into a technology company that sells products to protect our members, whether that be their retirement or the assets from an insurance perspective. It is a technology company more so than ever. If you talk to our board member, if you talk to our leadership team, you'd hear those words coming out of their mouth. And so from my perspective, I have to be the chief technology officer for the company. I think about this in terms of my old world as both the R&D arm and the manufacturing arm of an industrial company. And so as I come into my job, I see it in a couple of different elements. One, first and foremost, the back office operations of the company have to run digitally and in an automated fashion. And, that is something that I'm familiar with and I understand how to do. The second part, I think, of my role that is important is to be a catalyst for technology, to be that R&D arm that looks at both applied technology, but also design of technology to meet our members in different ways than we have in past. And so working with product managers in all of our lines of business to help educate them on how some of these future technologies that we're starting to see come up in the industry could help change and scope the way that our products are developed and the features and functions of our products going forward. And then lastly, I think the job's going to have a much more commercial angle to it than it ever has in the past, where as a technology leader, it's part of my job to go out and help us sell into different distribution channels. You know, we made the courageous move this year to really change our underlying business model. And we announced that we're exiting the exclusive agent model. There'll be no more nationwide specific agents that only sell nationwide products. And we're leaning heavily into a channel of independent agents. Well, independent agents have a very specific set of needs. They want a frictionless transaction. They want to be able to have a seamless service event for their members and their customers. And at the heart of providing that is going to be technology. And so the third leg of my job is really spending more time with the commercial side of the business, helping those channels understand the investments that we're going to make in them, and frankly, listening to them to understand and lay out the technology roadmap that needs to be in place to support them.
That's really interesting. It's ironic in some ways, Jim. There was this trend, a decade, 15 years ago, where IT departments, companies generally speaking, were outsourcing a tremendous portion of IT. And part of the hypothesis behind that was it's really not that strategic. Let's have third parties managing the majority of what we're doing from a technology perspective, because it's not really, quote unquote, the business. And now, as you say, and like you, I hear it all the time, I think for very good reason, that there are a number of businesses, a number of industries that are transforming themselves such that they are technology companies that sell X, in your case, insurance. And it's interesting to think about that evolution from, not that long ago, questioning whether or not, CIO roles, IT departments would even exist in the near term, to now, as you point out and as you describe your role, becoming more strategic than ever, getting involved in, determining the business model, of getting more involved in product-centric decisions. I wonder, as a longtime CIO, a CIO of many different business units within General Electric, and eventually the global CIO, in addition to your role as the global CIO at Nationwide, if you could reflect upon the changes that have led to this.
I've lived exactly what you're talking about. When I joined GE, Gary Reiner, long-term friend and I'd say visionary at that time, was really running the play of kind of 70-70-70 and how you took and outsourced a lot of the operational side. That's a time when IT was really viewed as back office, run the lights, keep the lights on, and run it for as low as cost as possible. And I've lived the transition into today, where we've really gone from that kind of project-based operational mentality to one of being product-focused, where we've moved from the back office to the front office. And in the front office, we have the expectation of managing not just the operational side of the job at a cost that makes sense from a product cost perspective, but also really thinking about the investment in future features and functionality that are going to drive product growth. So, revenue targets that are tied to investment in technology or features and functions that ride on infrastructure and technologies that may not even exist today become more a part of the IT role. And I'd say, some leaders in the function have been able to come along with that and make that transition. Others have not, but it is a drastically different job today than it was 20 years ago when I first started getting into this business.
And what changes are necessary in order to realize this? So, naturally, a lot of what was outsourced, I'm speaking generally speaking, not necessarily about you or at GE or at Nationwide, but even more generally philosophically, that which was outsourced, much of it needs to come back in. But also, there are process changes and technology changes, to say nothing of the perhaps the most important thing, cultural changes, skill changes that are necessary in order to realize the vision that you've described. Now, I realize there's a lot that I'm asking there. Maybe you can sort of unpack a little bit of some of the top tier changes that are necessary for a CIO, for an IT team, to become more nimble, to become more product-centric, to get more involved in the revenue side of the equation and not just the efficiency side of the house?
Sure. The first thing I'll talk about is a move from project to product. In old school thinking, you got a level of investment to go invest in the next ERP or the next, you know, piece of custom developed software. You ran it to an end and then you moved it into an operational group, and you know, you manage the budget within there, the ups and the downs and the risks that happen, but at the end of the day, you finish the project and you called it a success. In a product world, you think about it differently. You're making an investment, but you're going to make that investment in terms of a business return. It's going to drive down the overall operating expense of the company. It's going to drive revenue growth. And you're going to start to think more about the financials on a per unit cost basis. How do I understand that an additional dollar of unit cost has to return more than a dollar of value back on the top line revenue growth of the company, or probably more importantly, on the bottom line income of the company? You've got to be more of a long-term builder of an application. You know, in a project world, you have a beginning and you have an end, and in many cases, you walked away. In a product-based world, you don't have an end. In fact, you've got to care for and feed that product in the long run, and you've got to think about, you know, when do you sunset the application, the product? When do you upgrade the product? How do you tie that back to the business goals? And so that whole idea of first moving from a project mentality to a product mentality is the first part. The second is you've got to have the skills to do it. In kind of the old world of outsourcing, you had a lot of mid-level program and project managers who manage contracts. In the new world of product management, one, you need more entry-level hands-on keyboard. So you need software engineers and developers, and you need people that are specialists in data technology, and you need people who understand what it takes to work in a cloud and run the underlying infrastructure. And so you can't trust that anymore to an outsourcer completely. In the middle of the organization, you need to retrain and reskill those project and program managers to manage products. You know, they have to be able to manage technical resources again. And I'd say that the thing is the same, though, which is probably the third element of this that has stayed true all through that, is you still got to be deep in technology. You had to be deep in technology in a world where you were managing it from an outsourcing perspective. And maybe in a different way, now I have to be deep in technology, not just for how do I run it, but how do I see the trends, and how do I translate those trends into capabilities for products that we could be selling to our customers going forward, and play that role of kind of chief engineer or head of R&D for the company. That's a new role that I didn't have to play before, but now is more of an expectation.
Well, it's interesting. It also would suggest that it's taking the kind of some of the old skills that continue, as you say, of being deep technologists, but now to a much greater degree, being cognizant of how value is created within one's company or one's industry. And that strikes me as new, especially if thinking about where we just came from, of an environment where IT was such a back office function that it could be largely outsourced. Now you need people who can stand toe-to-toe with any of the rest of the business executive team and talk about the future and the art of the possible. Perhaps we can use you as the mechanism of explaining how one develops a team that has that degree of smarts and curiosity and business acumen, because this was a new industry for you. Yes, you'd worked in finance. You worked within GE Capital, for example, and were the IT executive of GE Capital as one example of a financial services role that you've had. But obviously, as you point out, a new kind of environment, new sort of dynamics. How did you prepare yourself? And maybe there, but you know, as an analogy to the rest, how do you see IT teams developing that appropriate level of business acumen to, again, realize the vision you just created?
You know, so you said it, coming into a job cold, I had to learn a lot to be successful. And I think it's a lot of the same things that a team that's in transition from kind of traditional IT roles into ones that are more product focused have to go through. So for me, first I started with, you know, a set of trusted partners who could just educate me on the industry. To your point, I'd worked in financial services, but I'd really never seen insurance before, and I'd never seen the elements of financial services that existed in our financial services business. So thinking about retirement plans and annuities, so those were new to me. And so one, you know, there were a set of trusted partners who could educate me both on the industry, but probably more importantly, give me an outside-in view of Nationwide in the industry. And, you know, no holds barred, right? They didn't worry about telling me what they thought was the polite thing to say. They said it, you know, just as they really viewed it. And the interesting part is I talked to kind of multiple partners, there were very different views. What one company thought was a deep strength and competitive advantage for Nationwide, somebody else thought about as, you know, a disadvantage. And so for me, I had to listen to both sides and make up my own mind as to where the truth lied between the two. The second thing is really understanding the culture of the company. And this is just general coming in from the outside. Nationwide obviously has a very different culture than GE did. It has a very, you know, different culture than any other company does. And so I spent a lot of time just understanding the culture of how work gets done here. This is a very collegial organization. This is one that is built on trust. When you think about the products and services that we provide, we take the member and their the things that matter most to them as the first input into anything that we do. You know, coming from a publicly traded company, the customer was always important, but you also had to think about the shareholder. In a private company, I didn't have to worry as much about that. We could invest probably more easily for the long term than I could if I was still in a publicly traded company. So understanding the culture was a big part of getting into the company. And then, you know, one of the most interesting things I did was to become a Nationwide customer. Self-admittedly, I was not a Nationwide member when I joined. And so whether it be the property and casualty from my home and auto insurance to, you know, thinking about retirement plans and annuities and the different features and functions of our products, becoming a customer was a great way to get an outside-in view of the organization. And so that really helped me understand, to your point, what's the business we're in? You know, how do we make money? How do we think about making money? You know, at the end of the day, when your member is your customer, the bottom line either has to come back to the member and reduce rate or better products, features, and functionality. That's different than being a publicly traded company where the bottom line goes to the shareholder and you're trying to maximize that. Here, we're trying to optimize that to be able to give back to the member. So I had to learn those things about the business first. And then second, the technology piece came, which is what are the technologies that we have today? Where are we headed from a technology roadmap? And how does that align to the overall business strategy? Literally in the second week that I was here, we were with our board of directors going over our updated business strategy document. I couldn't have thought about a better time to come in because I got to hear it and see it from the board's point of view as a way to help me come up to speed more quickly. So for me, those are the sorts of things that I did to prepare myself for coming into the job, Peter.
Excellent. You followed a long-serving CIO in Mike Keller, who had one of the longer tenures as a CIO anywhere, someone who left of his own volition and with a great reputation. But naturally, it was your coming into the organization there was a natural point at which things could be rethought. And you've talked about some of that rethinking that was necessary. But I wonder if you can just, again, reflect a little bit on that process of engaging a new team, of thinking both about those things that are special about the organization that need to be threads pulled from the past into the future, while also putting your own fingerprints on the plans that you've described and maybe bending the culture in some important ways, again, as you've noted.
You know, I was lucky to take over after Mike, to your point, legendary CIO who really had a view for what technology should be doing in Nationwide. And so there were two key pillars to the technology strategy that I was asked to come in and continue the transformation on. I always tell people I was hired to continue the transformation, not do a turnaround. And that's, you know, I have to give Mike credit for that. He has a strong technology team. He has great talent and had a strong vision. And so first and foremost, my job is to continue that, not change it. And so his first pillar was really around modernizing the technology team itself. We're a 100% agile today because of Mike and his, and the, frankly, his broader leadership team's vision for how to get to very fast turnaround of products and features and functions for our business users and our members' perspective. And that had to happen first because the second pillar was one of modernization of all of the underlying platforms. Literally, Mike had the vision and frankly the courage to take the risk to modernize every one of our underlying platforms, from our policy management system to our claim system, our life insurance transactional system, our retirement plan system, our annuity system. Every one of those underlying systems has been undergoing a rewrite or re-implementation, really to start to provide a platform on which the company is going to grow going forward. And so, you know, my first and foremost job is to complete what Mike really started. You know, I'd say the transition of the organization was well toward complete. The modernization of the underlying platforms, if we're swimming across the ocean, we're about halfway there, and you know, we can see shoreline, we know what it's going to take to get there. And then the third pillar is really one that I'm bringing with the team today, which is how do we leverage that to really create a set of customer journeys, a customer journey, thinking about a customer who's going to go through life and have different needs at different points in life. And our job is going to be to meet them at those different points. And so when you think about the application of artificial intelligence, or you think about what IoT means for usage-based insurance products, how we think about the API landscape and how we connect into different ecosystems, that's the build off of that foundation that Mike built that I'm now focused on.
Excellent. And I wonder if you, as you reflect on the future, where are some of the things that, what are some trends that particularly excite you? What are some items that are making their way onto the roadmap as you think a few years out?
You know, one really starts to think about member journeys. So I'll use an example of my dad and my daughter. You know, when my dad graduated from college, he moved back to his hometown. And he met a guy named, he went back to an old friend of his, a guy named Bill Feasby, who became his agent for life. You know, he was there when my dad needed his first auto policy, when he needed his first home policy. He was there as my dad was thinking about buying annuities for retirement. And he was there in my dad's later life thinking about life insurance and how to do estate planning. And that was kind of my dad's journey of protecting himself throughout the different elements of his life. Then I think about my daughter. You know, my daughter is a freshman in college. She's going to graduate from college in a couple of years. And her first interaction with this world is going to be that she needs renter's insurance and she's going to need a car owner's insurance. Because believe it or not, I'm going to make her get off my policy. People tell me that doesn't happen, but I'm convinced it will. when that happens, you know, her interaction is going to be very different. You know, odds are she's not going to move back to her hometown. And if she does, she's probably not going to meet somebody from high school who's going to be her agent for life. You know, she's probably going to find her first apartment on renters.com. And, you know, on renters.com or some interface like that, she's probably going to be proposed the idea of, hey, if you're going to do this, you probably need renter's insurance. And here's what that policy would look like. And here's the cost of it. And, oh, by the way, if you want to bind that policy, just click this button. You know, I think she's going to start her own business at some point in life. And when she does, she's going to update her LinkedIn profile. And I think that's going to create a high quality lead for some independent agent someplace or consultant someplace who's going to say, hey, have you thought about retirement plans for your employees? This is something I can help you set up. You know, she's going to get married. She's going to have kids. And, you know, she's going to be out someplace online buying diapers and something's going to recognize, hey, wait a minute, you've got kids. Maybe now you need life insurance and it's going to take everything it knows about you and provide a policy quote right then and there that she can click on and bind. And then later in life, you know, odds are she's going to have 5 to 6 different jobs, which means she's going to have 5 to 6 different defined contribution plans or 401ks that she's going to want to consolidate at some point in life and turn into a defined benefit plan to make sure that, you know, she's got all the money that she needs in retirement. That journey management is going to happen with technology going forward. And so the technologies that I think are behind that are now making that a reality are, you know, this idea of digital twins. You know, we think about a digital twin for a physical asset. I think there's a digital twin of a person where you can meet that person at different points in life. And the way you're going to do that is you're going to apply models through artificial intelligence that are going to be able to connect metadata with that twin to be able to trigger something to happen. I think you're going to see smart technology really change the way we think about financial services and change the way we think about insurance, usage-based insurance. We've launched a smart drive and we're launching a smart ride product that are basically usage-based insurance for the auto industry, where we're only going to charge you and pay for insurance when you drive your car. So if you've got a car that parks in the garage half the year, you're not going to pay as much for that car as the car you're driving 12 months around. And how you drive it is going to determine the rate that you pay. That's one area of technology I'm really excited about. And I think it's going to redefine the way we think about the industry in total. The other one, Peter, the other technology that I'm fascinated with that is really early on is quantum compute. And I'm interested in quantum compute really because I'm taking a piece of knowledge out of my old job of predictive modeling. You know, the GE's aviation business, I think, has done a fantastic job of using predictive modeling to design products and to predict where failure points are going to occur within their product set. And a limiting factor of that scaling today is it takes a lot of compute capacity to be able to run all of the models to simulate all of the different things that could happen. And so if you take that into my world and you think about the design of a home or the design of a car, and if you think about the fact that there's not just one design of a home, there's millions of designs, I think and I hope and I have some vision that quantum compute can provide a platform on which we can build real-time modeling where we can create personalized insurance and protection products modeling against the failure modes that we could see in the design of someone's home or car or how they drive their car or where they drive their car. And so I think that predictive modeling technology on top of quantum compute has an opportunity that we just don't even understand yet.
Very interesting. Well, interesting vision of the future. And Jim, we'll look forward to keeping in touch and seeing how that continues to evolve in your environment. I appreciate your time today, Jim Fowler. Thank you so much for joining me on Technovation and sharing a bit about your experience at Nationwide, your thoughts about the future, your plans going forward. It's been a great conversation.
Great. Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn and a partner at Greylock Partners.